Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for this special call with Tony Khan to discuss the sold-out AEW Double or Nothing live this Sunday from Louis Armstrong Stadium at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in Queens, New York. Just some quick housekeeping in the interest of time and giving opportunities to as many people as possible. We ask that you kindly refrain from asking two-parted questions and please try to keep your questions focused on Double or Nothing. I'll turn it over to Tony for some opening thoughts, and then we'll open the lines for questions. Tony.
Thank you very much, Danny. I really appreciate it. Hi, everybody. It really is going to be an exciting, exciting weekend. I really appreciate you joining us for the Double or Nothing media call. It's a sold-out show, and it's going to be a huge pay-per-view event. It's the original AEW show. So, of course, this brings us back 7 years to the original Double or Nothing, and Double or Nothing's always been a tremendous event. Last year, it was chosen by numerous publications, including Sports Illustrated, as the best wrestling event of the year. And I'm very excited about this edition of Double or Nothing, and I also look forward to answering your questions and today during the call. And then hopefully, if any of you are coming to Double or Nothing, I'll try and stay as late as possible. I'll answer every single question there on Sunday. Thanks for doing this, and we can begin the questions now. Thank you, Danny.
Excellent, Tony. First up, we have John Alba with the takedown on SI, followed by Brian Zillum with PW Torch. John, go ahead.
Tony, really looking forward to the show this weekend. It'll be great to see the crew and all you guys there. I would have to imagine 12-year-old Tony Khan's pretty excited about Cactus Jack coming into his wrestling company. What extent of involvement do you anticipate Mick to have with you guys, and would you be open to seeing him perform in the ring at some point?
Thank you very much, John. I'm very excited that Mick Foley is joining AEW, and I cannot wait to see Cactus Jack back on TBS, and I am very excited to have him at Double or Nothing this Sunday as part of the buy-in, and we're just thrilled Mick's going to be co-hosting the event with Renee. They're good friends, and when I suggested this to Mick, he thought it was a great idea, and he's really thrilled about it because we are big fans of Mick, and Mick loves pro wrestling, and AEW is where the best wrestles. So for a legendary professional wrestler, somebody who's so thoughtful about the sport and such a highly intelligent person, who's one of the most accomplished wrestlers in the history of this sport, it's just an honor to have Mick Foley in AEW. And thankfully, he's a fan of AEW. He follows wrestling, and he's going to bring so much knowledge and insight to the wrestlers backstage and to the broadcast starting this Sunday. I'm excited to have Mick as a part of AEW. He has a very rich history. When I started watching wrestling on TBS, I was 8 years old, and Cactus Jack versus Sting was the main thing on the show, and it was the most exciting thing in WCW. When I started watching it, I was a big fan of the show, and I first saw Cactus Jack as a villain on WCW on TBS, and then I saw Cactus Jack in ECW, and I'm a huge fan of his throughout his career and everything he accomplished throughout his illustrious time in wrestling as an in-ring wrestler, but also all of his contributions. I've really enjoyed his books, Have a Nice Day and Foley is Good. I read them in high school and think of them as two of the best wrestling books I've read, along with John Moxley's book, which I also think is one of the best wrestling books. And very fitting to have Mick Foley co-hosting this panel with Renee, somebody he's good friends with. And I think they have a great rapport, and it's going to be great for us. They'll be able to interview wrestlers and guests, and to have Mick's insight on the show and also backstage is going to be very valuable. And right now we're focused on Mick broadcasting and lending his experience to AEW and so much goodwill in the pro wrestling community exists for Mick Foley, and to have him officially as part of AEW, hopefully that increases everyone's goodwill towards AEW. That's part of the idea. I can't speak for Mick Foley as to whether he'd want to wrestle or if he's going to wrestle anytime soon. But if he ever does, I would love for him to do it in AEW. But I also don't want to put him in a situation in which he'll be uncomfortable. I want him to feel good about this. And I know he's taken so many big hits and had such an amazing career with so many spectacular moments. And physically, I would only ever ask him to wrestle if he felt up to it and that he could live up to the physical demands. Thank you for asking. And again, I'm very excited to have Mick Foley coming to AEW starting this Sunday at Double or Nothing. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Brian Zillum with PW Torch is up next, followed by Bill Pritchard with WrestleZone.com. Brian.
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Tony, the upcoming Brawl in the Ballpark partnership with the Minnesota Twins feels like a unique crossover event for AEW. I wonder if you could just go into detail what sparked the idea for the collaboration and how those conversations came together.
Well, I have a great relationship with the Minnesota Twins. First of all, I am the owner and chairman of True Media Networks, which is the largest and best sports analytics and engineering firm in the world. We work with amazing media partners, including ESPN, on a number of sports and projects, and provide analytics services to numerous teams. True Media supports 29 out of the 30 Major League Baseball clubs and works with players and staff across all 30 clubs. And I love sports analytics and data. We have great relationships in baseball, but in particular, I have really strong relationships with the Minnesota Twins. My good friend Daniel Adler is in the front office and a top executive with the Twins. He's been there for many years. And I attended Daniel's wedding, which was actually there at the Twins ballpark. And it has always been a close friendship. We've been friends for 15 years. He worked with me at the Jaguars at one point and has been working now in baseball for many years in statistics and analytics. And that's how we started talking about it. And he thought it would be a great thing to collaborate talking about AEW. Incredibly, it was actually in September of 2018, or I guess August of 2018. It was in August of 2018 that I was in Minnesota for Daniel's wedding, as I had just mentioned. And this was at a very important time for AEW. It was actually weeks before the original All In. And I was working towards securing a number of the wrestlers. And I remember being at the Mall of America the day after Daniel's wedding and having a phone call where I put together probably 90% of the points to finish Chris Jericho's agreement. And I remember having brunch with Daniel and his family the day after his wedding and telling them about this idea I had that it was AEW that I was working on. And it's always been a good friendship. So that actually is what sparked it. But I have a lot of relationships with the Twins. That one is the closest one. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Tony. Bill Pritchard with WrestleZone.com is up next, followed by Andrew Badala with Final Bell Media. Bill.
Hey, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Wanted to ask another question about Mick Foley's status. Can you just clarify, like, he'll be at every pay-per-view, and is it strictly an on-air talent role? Just wanted to follow up because, you know, you kind of mentioned, like, him possibly, like, giving advice or feedback. Like, he's not a coach in an official capacity, right? It's just strictly on-air right now?
Right now, he's working as an on-air host, but I also think with Mick Foley, he's a brilliant wrestling mind. He's going to bring insights and ideas, and he's going to work with the wrestlers and have ideas for the show. So I hope he'll will contribute in a number of ways. I know he's interested in helping out in every way he can, including as an ambassador, doing media, hosting the shows. He will be at all the pay-per-views and sometimes at TV too. Not every show, but at some of the events. And always at the pay-per-views, it from for the most part. I think, you know, he's going to be at a lot of the upcoming events for sure. So I'm very excited to have Mick joining us in AEW and being a part of the team. And I'm sure there's a number of different ways he'll have ideas and things he can do to contribute. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Tony. Andrew Baydala with Final Bell Media is up next, followed by Samantha Shipman with Power Bombshells. Andrew?
Tony, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you, man?
I'm good. Congratulations on this weekend. Looking forward to AEW Double or Nothing. Can you speak on the unique venue choices that you guys, AEW, has kind of selected more recently? I saw the unique content that you're putting out as well with TikTok for your pre-show, yes, which I think is brilliant. Do you want to talk on the venue selections here? I mean, some of these venues have been met with a lot of positive reception, especially the Fairway to Hell and now the Beach Blast. Is that something you guys really focus in on to separate yourself from the competition?
Well, it's a great point, man. And I appreciate you bringing several good examples up there. And we have a really strong, robust team. It's a number of different people contributing. Fairway to Hell is something that I had wanted to do for a long time. I love golf and I love wrestling. And I know there's a lot of people that feel the same way about both. And then there's the ability to get fans and make new fans and find exciting ways to present wrestling and try new challenges. And that's something I wanted to try with Fairway to Hell. And the AEW Live Events team did a great job identifying a venue. And we worked with the PGA and the TGL to put this together. And I look forward to more Fairway to Hell events. And then as far as unique venues, the team has done a great job identifying places for us to bring the show. We've collaborated on a number of exciting activations, and we're trying to find cool venues for the TV shows. And the live events team has been doing a great job on those. And then our partners at Warner Brothers Discovery have been working with us really closely. They've helped us put together some great activations and events. I really enjoyed the show we did at San Diego Comic Con a couple years ago. That was so much fun with the mixed tag team tournament with Adult Swim. That was a great partnership. And more recently, just now, as you referenced, we're going to be launching, starting next week, Wednesday Night Dynamite with AEW Advance ahead of the show, our AEW special on TikTok, a pre-show, a live event before AEW Wednesday Night Dynamite. I'm so excited. And this was an idea that came from Warner Brothers. And it's a great idea from them. And they're going to partner with us to launch a new show on TikTok. We have great collaboration with Warner Brothers, and that's going to continue for a very long time. And a number of people contributing ideas and us all working to put it together. That's a good team, and that's a good description of AEW right now, is a very strong team. Thank you for asking, man.
Samantha Shipman with Power Bombshells is up next, followed by Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer. Samantha?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm quite well. Thanks for asking.
Good. Last night during the show, we got the unfortunate news that Willow Nightingale not only has to bow out of the Owen Hart tournament, but also has to relinquish her TBS championship. I know it probably came about suddenly, but do you have kind of any idea on how you'll crown a new champion, and will that come before or after, or I'm sorry, during or after the Owen Cup tournament?
These are great questions. It was terrible news that Willow Nightingale is out injured. I really was looking forward to having Willow Nightingale on the show. As a hometown hero, I thought it would be great to have Willow Nightingale as the TBS champion, one of the top names in the tournament, against the New Japan Women's Strong Champion, Alex Windsor. I think that's a great matchup. They're two fan favorites, but it's a hard-hitting match, and it's a great sport wrestling when you have two athletes that love the competition as much as Alex Windsor and Willow Nightingale. So that would have been a great match, but obviously it's not cleared by the doctors for Willow to wrestle at Double or Nothing. And probably for the best for Willow to heal up for weeks to come. And she has multiple obligations during that time with the Owen Hart tournament and the TBS championship that were lined up. So I understand her decision, and I respect it. And I think Willow Nightingale is one of the top stars in AEW and has been for years, and has really worked her way into a very prominent position throughout the years, and has accomplished so many great things as TBS champion, World Tag Team champion, Owen Hart Cup winner, and she was trying to become the first two-time Owen Hart Cup winner. She's also done an outstanding job as the TBS champion. She has made 10 defenses of the title. She has an undefeated singles record. I think Willow Nightingale has been outstanding. She is one of the great stars of AEW, and within the women's division, some of the top stars, particularly among the fan favorites, have been out with injuries, and everybody's done a great job keeping really strong matches, and everybody's been very focused on making sure Double or Nothing is going to be a great show, even when we make changes. I was looking forward to Athena versus Mina Shirakawa in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. They're going to have a great match now at Double or Nothing a little sooner than expected. And the plans are different. I have thoughts extensively about the changes I'm making and changes I have made throughout the year. You know, certainly the, if you'd asked me at the scrum after Revolution, I had a lot of plans this year that involved Timeless Toni Storm. Those plans are very different without her being available. That changed within a matter of days. And then going from Revolution to Dynasty, I felt very strongly about having Persephone involved in Double or Nothing. And I was really looking forward to having Persephone involved in both Super Card of Honor and Double or Nothing in the shows going forward. She will be back, I think, soon, hopefully. But Persephone has been out. We've had a number of other stars sidelined for a week or two at a time. Sometimes you may not even know they're happening, where people are not cleared here and there. Chris Statlander is going to be back to fight in the world title match, which is huge for us because that's an awesome four-way match. And that's what I'm talking about when I say people are stepping up and will make the changes. When you lose a great star like Persephone, the CMLL world champion, she gets misted by the Triangle of Madness and she's on the sidelines. Then we've got a great four-way fight. And it's really coming to focus. You know, it's been a very fascinating development, this relationship between Chris Statlander and Hikaru Shida that has played out in recent weeks. And I think that the two of them are two of the top champions ever in AEW. And of course, it's a great rivalry with Jamie Hayter and Tekla. And to have a match with four of the great world champions ever in AEW in a four-way fight, I'm very excited for that. And that's a great example of taking the changes and making the very, very best of any situation. And I want to continue to do that. So now with Willow, I'm going to take what is, of course, now, again, a great star, a fan favorite for that matter, and somebody that, in this case, is a hometown hero that you want to have involved, if possible, as a part of Double or Nothing. And I think, personally, Willow has done a fantastic job, and she'll continue, when she is clear, to get great opportunities. And I know she will continue to make the best of them. And I think the women in AEW and the women in Ring of Honor, who have just been doing such a fantastic job, and in the weeks to come, I think you're going to see more and more of that, that so much of the best women's wrestling is in Ring of Honor, and I hope people see that and watch it, that the rivalries and the matches and the intensity of what's happening in ROH is also very interesting. Then you have a great example with the Ring of Honor World Champion in a very prominent position now in AEW, in both the men's and women's Owen Hart tournament, with great wrestlers who are able to represent multiple companies and wrestle internationally, whether it's Bandido going to CMLL or Athena traveling to Stardom and working with multiple promotions. I think we've got a great group of stars here working with us, And when it comes to the women's wrestling, certainly when you lose a star like Willow off of a show, and in this case, probably multiple shows, that is challenging. Of course, we have great wrestlers stepping up in the world title picture and in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. And then you asked about the TBS title. Yes, we'll be addressing that after Double or Nothing, after we get some clarity with these changes in the Owen Hart and the world title picture. But absolutely, we'll be addressing the TBS title immediately coming out of Double or Nothing. And we'll also be very excited to see as the Owen Hart Foundation tournament goes on. Of course, Willow being out in the near future, we'll see a wild card come in and take that spot. And I'm very excited for everything that is about to happen and for the matches at Double or Nothing, particularly that women's world championship four-way fight and Mina Shirakawa versus Athena, which we had already been greatly anticipating. And you saw that they had their face-to-face confrontation on Collision ahead of the 8-woman tag on Dynamite. I didn't know at that point that Willow was going to be out, of course. That injury happened on Saturday in the match versus Red Velvet, which was a great match on what I thought was an excellent show this past Saturday. I think absolutely with some of the injuries and some of the people that have been unavailable, the women in AEW and in Ring of Honor have done a great job stepping up. And I think Willow hopefully will be back, I hope, sooner rather than later. Hopefully on the sooner side. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Tony. Dave Meltzer with the Wrestling Observer is up next, followed by Dominic D'Angelo with Studio1Sports.com. Dave.
Hey, Dave. Tony, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. Really good. I'm looking forward to Sunday. I mean, the lineup's awesome. I guess I have like two real quick ones. I mean, one is essentially, is there going to be a pay-per-view between Forbidden Door and All In? And I guess the other thing is just, I'm just kind of curious as to the status of Bryan Danielson, just because, you know, he did such an awesome job and has done such an awesome job as an announcer. And I know he's had, you know, obviously recurring neck injury problems. And I was just wondering, like, how often do you anticipate him being able to announce shows going forward? And so I guess that's the two things that I was really curious about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, it's great questions. I'll take them in reverse order. I think Bryan does an excellent job. We have a great commentary team, and they step up for each other. And in the case of Bryan Danielson and Taz, they both had very hard-hitting wrestling careers and injuries that beat them up a lot. And I think having these great commentators, I like when they work together on pay-per-view shows or on Dynamite. It's always great. It is interesting because Bryan lives on the West Coast and Taz lives on the East Coast, and the long flights really beat them up. So on some of the more East Coast tours, Taz, it's a lot easier for him to make the shows. And on the West Coast tours, it's a lot easier for Bryan to make the shows. So I try to make the travel as easy on the two of them as possible. So that involves sometimes them rotating a little bit. And I also think that hopefully there's more opportunities to see them together at times. But I think you're right. But when you asked about Bryan, he does an excellent job. I think Taz also does an excellent job, and I love having both of them. And I know that it's hard for both of them to do the long flights with all the injuries they had in wrestling. And then when you asked about the pay-per-view in July, I am very interested in doing a pay-per-view in July. I do think we have Forbidden Door in June, and then at the end of August with All In. It's something that could be very lucrative, but also very additive. It can be additive, and I would only do something like this if it's additive. I take a lot of pride in the quality of the AEW pay-per-view shows. I think we bat a very high average in AEW and deliver great pay-per-view events. And I would only explore adding additional pay-per-view events to the AEW calendar if I feel that they're going to be additive. And I think there are opportunities. And, you know, I think that's another good question. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Tony. Dominic D'Angelo with StudioOneSports.com is up next, followed by Brandon Thurston with WrestleNomics. Dominic.
Tony, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Dominic. Hi.
Hey, how are you, man? Looking forward to the pay-per-view this weekend. I wanted to get your thoughts on what MJF had to say to Ariel Helwani earlier this week in the interview. He mentioned that he thought the Terry Bollea era of big one star is kind of over, and then compares AEW's kind of top of the card, so to speak, more to the bad boy Detroit Pistons, where you kind of pass the ball around and there's a whole bunch of players that kind of add to it. Do you agree with that philosophy? And how overall do you kind of look at your top tier wrestlers on the top of the card?
Yes, that is how I see it. You know, I've been a fan of wrestling since I was 7 years old, and every year I started watching more and more of it. And I started watching it first when I was seven, and then started watching WCW when I was eight, and then started trading tapes when I was 12. And when I was 12, I also started writing a wrestling show in the back of the classroom, in emails, message boards, dial-up internet, and it evolved over the years. And it's always been called Dynamite. And the philosophy of the wrestling shows that I've always liked to work on is lots of great stars involved in several exciting rivalries and multiple great matches every week that hooks you in and keeps developing exciting rivalries from show to show and delivering tremendous matches consistently. And that's always been the thing I've wanted to do. And I feel that we have delivered that for the better part of 7 years and continue to put together very strong shows. And the most of the credit has to go to the professional wrestlers of AEW. AEW is where the best wrestle, and they show it consistently on Wednesday Night Dynamite, on Saturday Collision, and on the pay-per-view events. And I think we had a tremendous 2025, and now I believe we're having an excellent 2026, building on what was such a strong year for the company last year. Thanks for asking.
Brandon Thurston with WrestleNomics is up next, followed by Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful. Brandon.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for your time. I was wondering if you would tell us with where AEW's business is now. Is AEW now profitable?
Well, that's a fair question. Our revenue is the highest it's ever been. I can't comment on where we stand in terms of every expense year to year. Certainly, this is going to be the most revenue we've ever generated and the strongest financial outlook for the company ever. I'm reinvesting in a number of projects, including digital projects, to grow the company for the future. So in addition to having the highest revenue by far in AEW history this year, I'm also making big investments for the future to grow the company. So, you know, as far as how it's accounted, I don't have all the figures in front of me, but I can say this is by far the most revenue we've ever brought in. And the future is the healthiest outlook, because I'll continue to reinvest in the business, developing new platforms and trying to open up new territories to grow the company in the future. But, you know, I know you do a great job covering wrestling, Brandon, and probably see a lot of these things. You know, it's a good question. And So just as you cover the industry very closely, I think you'd probably see that for a number of reasons, I'd project this to be the most revenue we've ever generated. And we're also launching some new projects and some international developments that will require investment that I think are very smart moves. So I would leave you with probably the biggest takeaway being the growth of the company and looking at how much we've been able to expand our revenue and how much we are strongly positioned for the future of AEW. And again, I think now is the perfect time growing our revenue to reinvest in the business. And perfect timing as we're going into Double or Nothing for me to double down on AEW for the future. Because AEW will be around for a very, very long time. Thanks for asking, Brandon.
Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful is up next, followed by Sully Khan with Slam Wrestling. Sean. Hey, Sean, you'll need to unmute. Okay, while Sean figures out his audio, let's go ahead and go to Sully Khan with Slam Wrestling, and then we'll go back to Sean. Sully?
Okay.
Hey, Tony, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Just wanted to ask you quickly about the Kyle O'Reilly, John Moxley title match for the Continental Championship. We saw on Wednesday with Kyle O'Reilly surviving the time limit. Is this a match that you think John Moxley is scared about, or is like maybe not scared, but like maybe a little worried about, where he thinks he could lose his title?
It's a very exciting match, and I'm very interested because certainly when the Continental Classic came last year, Kyle O'Reilly was on fire and he had a great winning streak, and his biggest wins were against John Moxley. And a lot of the spark that Kyle O'Reilly was able to capture, it seemed like it was very much alive last night. That was a great wrestling match. I've always thought that John Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly have tremendous chemistry. I loved the match they had in 2022 on Dynamite. And I think that their rivalry has just been outstanding. And that's why I thought it would be an excellent match, and it made a lot of sense for both men that they would want to revisit things given the way it was unresolved coming out of the Continental Classic. And both men are loyal to the people around them. Of course, Kyle O'Reilly's got a very close friendship with the conglomeration, and it was a great moment for Kyle O'Reilly to make his return as their partner and for them to bring him back to that incredible reaction in Vancouver at Dynasty. And we've seen some great matches from the conglomeration as a team. And with Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong chasing the World Tag Team Championships going into the main event last night, and Orange and Roddy had built a really strong bond while Kyle was out, which I don't think Roderick Strong ever expected to have such a close bond with Orange Cassidy, but it came together so well. They had been great rivals in years past, and they became a great team. And with them teaming up, it made sense for Kyle O'Reilly to want to revisit something that was really a close call for him in what had been a chance for him to go into the Continental Classic with so much momentum. And instead, John Moxley was able to turn it around and have one of the most incredible performances I've ever seen throughout the Continental Classic, with John Moxley going in to World's End and completely changing the perception the fans had at the beginning of the Continental Classic about him, which I expected. I was not surprised at all when John Moxley went out with no outside interference and wrestled in a series of matches in the Blue League, and you saw the fans becoming more and more supportive of John Moxley throughout the tournament, to the point where he got to the semifinal against Kyle Fletcher and had one of the greatest matches I've ever seen for so many reasons. But you could see the fans' perception of John Moxley changing as the match went on. And it was so compelling. And then in the final, he went back out and wrestled the person who is the greatest tournament wrestler ever and the person who is the defending champion and the winner of the Continental Classic and the person who set the highest standard in tournament wrestling ever with Kazuchika Okada. And for John Moxley to go out, win the tournament against Okada, and then give such a passionate speech. And in many ways, it showed the journey of John Moxley and also how successful he had been in the quest when he returned and created the Death Riders. And he had said he wanted to make AEW more competitive, stronger, better. He did all those things. And then he went out at the end of the Continental Classic and he gave a speech that explained how far AEW had come since John had returned. And had his methods been brutal and sometimes, in my opinion, over the line, like what he did to Bryan Danielson? Yes, absolutely. But John was very effective, and you could see AEW got stronger. The wrestlers united against a cause, which was taking John down and getting the world championship belt back out of that briefcase. And then by the end of the year, the realization that John actually loved AEW more than anyone and that he gave a speech and talked about why this is the greatest wrestling promotion in the world and connected with those fans at World's End. And to see the change in the perception of the fans for John, but also the realization of everything that he'd accomplished for AEW and what he'd been doing with the Death Riders, it was incredible. And who's to say whether it would have even been possible if Kyle O'Reilly had been in the tournament, because he absolutely had John's number up to that point. And now Kyle O'Reilly just came back at the last pay-per-view, and the person who put him out and put him on the shelf is John Moxley. And now Kyle has a great thing going with the conglomeration, but there is still the issue of the man who took everything from him. And in John's case, he has to look within himself, because Kyle O'Reilly has at times gotten the best of John, and John said he's not the same guy that Kyle wrestled back in November. Well, that's very true. And I'm really looking forward to this match for many reasons. I thought that was an outstanding 20-minute match last night, John Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly. Their rivalry and their matches have just been so fantastic throughout the years, and I'm very much looking forward to Mox versus Kyle O'Reilly for the Continental Championship. Now Kyle O'Reilly has earned himself a shot at that championship and gotten himself back into that place that he would have had to work so hard to get. After all this time off, I'm very excited to see that. It could have been a very compelling match at any point in the tournament, in the league or at World's End. And I think whether it's in the Continental Classic, whether it's at a huge pay-per-view setting, one-on-one, John Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly, no outside interference, sign me up. I am really excited, and I can't wait for that match for the Continental Championship at Double or Nothing this Sunday. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. We're going to try going back to Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful and then follow that up with a write-in from Bill Bodkin with the pop break. Sean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming back to me. Tony, with All In, obviously you're going back to Wembley this year. Is that the plan each year moving forward, or are you open to returning back to the United States in 2027, since there will be a major absence of a significant stadium wrestling show that year, with WrestleMania being in Saudi?
It's a tremendous question, Sean. I haven't decided what to do in 2027 yet. I am very excited for the event in 2026. And I think it's going to be a very strong showing, and we'll plan from there with a year to look ahead. But I do know 2027 will be another very big year for AEW, and I plan to take big swings. The people in England have been so good to us, It's incredible what we've accomplished through numerous events across TV and pay-per-view. But to look back at the events we've had, of course, we set the record for the most fans ever at the O2 for wrestling with Forbidden Door last year. And with All In London at Wembley Stadium, we set the record for the most fans anywhere buying tickets to watch pro wrestling, with over 81,000 tickets sold for All In. And to go back and have another great event and have over 50,000 people at Wembley for what was one of my favorite wrestling shows ever, and to be able to utilize the stage and utilize more of the stadium and have what looked on television and to the fans on the entrances and for the staging setups to be a more grand spectacle, that was incredible. Both the Wembley shows have been such home run hits for us, such incredible wins for AEW. And to go back and have a strong start and know that there's going to be so much interest in AEW All In throughout the summer, I expect this to be one of the greatest nights in AEW's history. And we'll have a very strong future in London, but of course also we'll have a lot of big events coming to the United States. I don't have the whole calendar planned for 2027 yet, but we'll definitely have some huge events coming up. And I'm very focused on All In 2026 at Wembley Stadium. And this whole summer, I think, is just going to be tremendous. Thanks for asking, Sean.
Thanks, Tony. Next up, I have a write-in from Bill Bodkin with the Pop Break, followed by a live question from Jim Salone with the Miami Herald. Tony, you give us a Mount Rushmore of Double or Nothing matches.
Is it actually the eighth Double or Nothing, Danny? Because there's seven, there's no year zero, right? So the 7-year anniversary, this would actually be the eighth Double or Nothing, I believe. Right?
Yes, doing the math on my hands, correct.
Yeah, so it's the eighth Double or Nothing. So then the question was, you threw me right before I even got to the question. So I think it's the eighth Double or Nothing. What was the question?
I apologize. He's asking for your Mount Rushmore of Double or Nothing matches in those 8 years.
Wow, what a great question. Well, you know what? That's a really tough write-in question, Danny. I will be remiss in because it's impossible to make that list without leaving off so many of the greatest matches in the history of the company. So many of the biggest moments for AEW have been at Double or Nothing. And there's multiple shows where I think you could pick multiple matches off the show, that have been transformative and excellent for AEW. That's really hard. There's a lot, there's so many that I could choose from. And man, I'd have to, I really have to think about that one. I'm maybe by the scrum, I would have time to prepare for that. But I, you know, with eight pay-per-views and numerous great matches across the shows, to try and narrow it down to four with a minute's notice, I can't do it that quick. I had to give a good answer that I haven't prepared for. So I'm not sure about that one. I think there's been so many incredible matches, and I could list so many and across the eight events before I could even begin to narrow it down to four. But thank you for asking.
Of course, Tony. Up next, we have Jim Varsalone with the Miami Herald, followed by Leonard Sorrell with Inside the Ropes Wrestling. Jim. Jim, are you able to unmute your line?
There, I got it. Thank you, guys. Thank you, as always, Tony. Jim Ross said that he's going to be there Sunday, and he's going through some testing now, but he's feeling great physically for things, and I guess he just signed a new one-year contract, if I read correctly. I'm just curious, Tony, what has he meant for AEW, and what do you see for the future of Jim? Is it just when he's able to, he'll come at his will, what he can do. What are your thoughts there with Jim? And thank you.
Well, I love JR, and he's been a huge part of AEW from the very beginning. He's the voice of the original AEW Double or Nothing and the host of Dynamite from the beginning. And Jim's had health challenges, and AEW stood by Jim throughout the challenges and tried to support him however we can. And I don't want to force him to travel to every show and put him in a precarious position. So I really appreciate Jim's insights, his experience in wrestling. He's got unparalleled knowledge, and he's a brilliant commentator, but also a very important figure in the history of wrestling backstage as well. And he's somebody that was instrumental in the launch of AEW, and I feel great loyalty to him, and I'm very appreciative of him. And I'm hopeful he'll be able to continue to rise above his health challenges. Thank you for asking.
Thanks, Tony. Up next, we have Leonard Sorrell with Inside the Ropes Wrestling, followed by David Bixenspan with Babyface versus Heel. Leonard.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for your time.
Hey. Thank you.
Yeah, really excited for the pay-per-view this Sunday. I would like to ask you about Ronda Rousey. Her appearance was like this big moment from Revolution. She just got done with a fight with Gina Carano. Are there plans to get her back for like a proper run now that her MMA obligations are over? And, you know, it's a division filled with such great talent. You know, how does Ronda Rousey fit in there if she decides to come and have a run?
It's a great question. Ronda Rousey is a tremendous fighter, and she's somebody that is always welcome in AEW. I've enjoyed working with Ronda in ROH, and I loved having her at AEW Revolution. And anytime Ronda wants to come back to AEW, she's always welcome. I know that she's got a family, and she's very much focused on her family, and I think that's awesome. And she's a really cool person. She's always been really good to AEW and good to me. And Ronda Rousey is always welcome in AEW. I would love to have her anytime when she's available to fight in AEW. And she's one of the great names in combat sports, and certainly somebody who is a great presence anytime she's here in AEW. Thank you for asking.
Thanks, Tony. Our last two questions today, we have David Bixenspan with Babyface versus Heel up next, followed by Amy Nemedy with WrestleJoy. David.
Hey, Tony.
Hey.
So got a two-part question about my AEW, one very simple, one a little more complex. Basically, with the Fast Channel, are there plans to try to offer it up to the Pluto TVs, the Google Free Play, the Zumos, et cetera, of the world, or to mainly just keep it within my AEW? And the other part is, what have you seen so far in terms of the split of which tiers subscribers are choosing? Are they gravitating towards the annual tier because of the value? Or are they leaning more towards month to month? What are you seeing mainly?
Well, I don't have all the data in front of me, Bex. These are very good questions. My AEW is primarily an international strategy, but there are different, in different regions, different features, and it's in some areas very robust. In the United States, where the majority of the media revenue is generated, the strategy is very focused on Warner Brothers. It's very focused on HBO Max and TBS and TNT for the TV. And other platforms that we're utilizing are often through Warner Brothers. For example, the TikTok show, which is a great partnership through Warner Brothers, or the AEW on TV social media and YouTube channels, where that is the Warner Brothers AEW social media feed. and they do an excellent job with those. On my AEW, I don't have all the data in front of me. I've been told everything's going very strong, and coming out of Double or Nothing, I'll be reviewing a lot of that data. But the signups have been tremendous. It's become a very strong international pay-per-view platform for us. And these are really good questions you're asking, and it's good things for me to follow up on. And I, the next time we do one of these, also, I would, you know, there's no shortage of events, and you're welcome to follow up with me, and I would give you more insight if you ask again, or follow up with Danny and the team. You know, we can try to get you more insights on some of these things, about how we trend, you know, and as much data as the business team is comfortable with sharing. But, you know, it's interesting stuff you're asking about, whether it's the annual bundles or the monthly plan. I'm not sure which is trending better, but I know the signups are very strong, and coming out of Double or Nothing, I'll be looking more into it. And these are good questions for sure. Thank you, Bix.
Thanks, Tony. Our final question today comes from Amy Nemedy with WrestleJoy. Amy.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I am doing great. I would like to talk to you about Darby Allin and his AEW World Championship run. From the very beginning of this championship reign, he has put the pedal to the metal, accelerating the excitement and anticipation around the world title. Every week, even twice a week, he's been putting on some of the most memorable matches we've seen, including Fairway to Hell. He seems to have redefined what it means to be a fighting champion with these defenses. How do you and Darby both plan for and accommodate that kind of work rate? And can you share your thoughts in watching this championship reign unfold?
Well, I am such a big fan of Darby Allin. And in his reigns as the TNT champion, he also had maintained a great pace and wrestled multiple times a month, sometimes every single week, as the champion. And I think the fans have come to respect Darby Allin as a workhorse. Then in the Continental Classic, he wrestled at such a high level in 2024 in some of the best matches of the tournament. And I was really looking forward to having Darby Allin wrestling every week in 2025 in the Continental Classic. And he got injured in week one. We've only had in the Continental Classic two injuries in 3 years. And thankfully, you never want to have a bad injury, but neither injury was a long-term injury that was a career ender. And in both cases, it was in week one. And an injury in the Continental Classic could be a huge change and really throw everything off. So to have it in the first week where in this case with Darby, frankly, it was more changes than I had to make the year before with Juice as far as the schedule and the plans because of the way things were scheduled out. And in the case of working with Darby Allin, he's such a brilliant wrestling mind, and he has great ideas for every match he's in to make them exciting. And he's so brilliant at the science of wrestling and wrestling different opponents of different sizes and different strengths and skills. And I think that from the very beginning, Darby Allin has been one of the top stars that from this first year of Dynamite. He was in the first world championship match ever on AEW Dynamite, and he delivers at a high level. His opponent has also been delivering at a very high level this year, MJF. And I'm so excited about this match with the world championship versus MJF's hair for many reasons. It's going to be a great world title fight. It's got high stakes all around. It's a personal rivalry that goes back many years. And I think across the AEW TV, we've done a fantastic job presenting the stakes of this rivalry, the history between these two, but also showing the importance of the world championship, where so many great wrestlers are clamoring for this championship. And Darby Allin, more so than any champion in history, has been willing to step up and fight week after week against the top challengers taking on open challenges, taking on the top contenders, fighting anybody that's ever beaten him before, fighting anybody that's earned a shot by beating a top contender along the way, fighting anybody that has any claim at all, he'll fight. And in the case of MJF, it's personal. He's making Max put something at stake that means a lot to Max. Max is one of the most vain people out there. Max spends more money on makeup than most of the women in AEW combined. And Max is absolutely in Hollywood and very focused on the finer things in life. And at the same time, of everything Max does and is obsessed with, they all take a back seat to wrestling. And he has shown, as another excellent student of the sport of wrestling, that Darby has really been able to psychologically take advantage of him. And Max loves playing the mind games, but Darby Allin is the one playing the mind game here, because he knows Max loves wrestling so much that he would put up something that means so much to him to get the championship back and get back to the top of the sport that both these men love so much. And I think that's what makes it so compelling. And also in the case of Darby Allin, it's why he's such an important figure to AEW as the champion. I thought that the ESPN write-up this week did a great job capturing that. And I thought that Andreas Hale did a tremendous job writing about Darby Allin's run in AEW and Darby Allin as a person, and trying to get insights into one of the most fascinating athletes in the world, and just my personal opinion, Darby Allin. And Darby Allin's been absolutely fantastic in AEW from the very beginning, and he is a great champion. He was a great TNT champion and a great tag team champion, and now he is such a great world champion for us. And to have this big fight on Double or Nothing, and to have Darby Allin as the champion now, after everything he's done for AEW and all the crazy risks he's taken in his career to get to this point, and to help AEW, to help Sting, to help us get to this position, it's really exciting. So it's a perfect match to be the Double or Nothing main event, but also Darby Allin is the perfect champion for AEW right now. And I'm so glad you asked about it, because I think Darby's doing so many great things and has been for years. And I'm glad that it's being recognized now. He's earned his position as the world champion, and he shows week after week why fans all over the world have come to love him and respect him, and why you go in these arenas and you see kids with their faces painted up like Darby, and everywhere we go. So I'm really looking forward to Darby's world title fight on Sunday. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Tony. We're a hair over time, but of course, I will give you a moment if you want to expound any further on what we have to expect with this sold-out AEW Double or Nothing weekend.
Oh, I'm so excited about this pay-per-view. It is a stacked show. There's so many rivalries. I think the AEW TV has been tremendous. I thought that was our best three-hour block ever on Wednesday last night, and I look forward to a lot of exciting TV coming out of Double or Nothing, but certainly Double or Nothing is going to be one of the best pay-per-views, and AEW always delivers great pay-per-views, and you can expect one of our best this Sunday. I'm so excited for Double or Nothing, and hopefully you can join us in person, and I hope to see a lot of you there, maybe at the Scrum, ideally, afterwards. I hope you can attend the event or at least watch it, and if you can't be there in person, hopefully I'll be able to talk to you on another media call soon. For all of you who are coming to Double or Nothing, I'll stay as long as it takes and answer your questions. And I really appreciate you being here. If there's anybody I didn't get a question in today and didn't get to answer your question, hopefully I'll be able to do it soon. We always do these media calls for all the pay-per-views, and I always try to get as many questions as I can. And also answer as many questions at every pay-per-view afterwards. Thank you for being here, and I really appreciate you all covering AEW and giving us this opportunity for Double or Nothing. for Double or Nothing was the first AEW pay-per-view, and several of you covered the original Double or Nothing 7 years ago and have been following AEW and giving us an opportunity to talk about our shows since the very beginning. And I really appreciate the coverage and the opportunity and the fair and balanced look you all take at wrestling. Thank you for being here. And hopefully I'll see most of you or many of you soon in person and talk to most of you again on these calls. And Danny, you do a great job moderating it. Great job to Danny and Robin on the call, staffing this thing, and hope to talk to you all again next month for this media call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony. And thanks, everyone. We're now at the end of our time. We'll be distributing an audio recording to all attendees shortly. We thank you again for being a part of today's call, and we're looking forward to you joining us for AEW Double or Nothing in New York City this Sunday. Have a great day.